Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to The Western Rookie, a hunting podcast full of tips, tricks, and strategies from seasoned Western hunters. There are plenty of opportunities out there. We just need to learn how to take on the challenges.
Hunting is completely different up there.
That part's 26 big game animals.
You can fool their eyes, but you can't fool their nose.
300 yards back to the road turned into 3 miles back the other way.
It's always cool seeing new hunters go and harvest an animal.
I don't know what to expect.
If there's anybody I want in the woods with me, it'll be you.
Welcome back to another Western Rookie Podcast episode brought to you by Go Hunt. We've got Jeff Helm on the podcast today, and it's going to be a really good in conversation, talking all kinds of different hunting stories. But before we dive into that, if you're listening to this podcast and you've pulled anything of value out of all of the content we've shared, our goal is to help as many people as possible, you know, learn about the West, learn how to get tags, apply for tags, build points, and have great experiences. And the best way we can do that is by reaching more people. So I please ask you to take a moment and give the podcast a rating and a review real fast. I promise Jeff and I will still be here when you get back. And with that, let's kick this episode off. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. I got a lot going on, but looking forward to the next few weeks as elk season's almost upon us. So,
oh man, it's some states I think are opening like in the next couple days. Some of the early season, you know, middle of August tags. I think Utah opens up pretty darn early as well. I know you've hunted Utah before. But yeah, and then, you know, September 1st, pretty much like dominoes, states start opening up.
Yep. Looking forward to it.
Do you do like an elk tour? Are you hitting multiple states a year, or are you pretty much focusing on like one tag or one hunt for elk per season?
You know, that has changed over the years. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. A lot of it just has to do with how many tags I have or don't have. Generally speaking, you know, my kids are all grown now. And so generally speaking, I try and hit one or two states. Sometimes I end up with more because you kind of bank on the OTC or, you know, something that's a little easier draw or something like that. And then last minute, you end up drawing a really good tag. And so you start to pour 8 gallons into a 5-gallon pail.
Yeah, I felt that way. I've only done one doubleheader season, you know, two elk hunts before, and it turned into about 19 straight days of elk hunting. I had like a 1-day turnaround, drop a bull off at home, get it in the freezer, reload, and head back out. And that gets, I'll admit, by January, I'm usually looking forward to sleeping in on a Saturday.
Yeah. I've had a couple years that were double bull years, but it's definitely the exception and not the rule.
Yeah. You do all kinds of hunting. You've done it. It looks like you definitely, I don't know if I would say adventure hunter, because I feel like that can be a bad rap, but certain people just really like to go out and do all kinds of different experiences, right? Other people, they're like, I have my deer stand. I just do the family hunt. That's my, but you seem to be more on the other side of like, I want to get out there and try different things, go to new places. Do you find that elk is still like the one favorite, like that we start with the foundation of September elk hunting and then we add things around that, but that's like the sacred hunt? Or do you find like, you know, other things are starting to be like, hey, you know what? I kind of like this other thing a little bit more.
Well, I've tried to live my life in a way that I've always said variety is the spice of life. And so you don't know if you like something or don't like something until you try it. So I have tried a lot of different kinds of hunting. The fabric that I hang on to is I love to archery hunt. Nothing against rifle hunting or anything like that. It's just not the same for me personally. I like the up close and personal. I like being challenged. I like coming home. I hate to say it, but I like coming home empty sometimes. If it was easy every year, then it wouldn't be the same. And so I definitely have a few things that I hold very near and dear to me. One of them is archery elk hunting for a bunch of different reasons. I mean, I grew up in the Midwest and, you know, elk was kind of this thing that everyone talked about, and a few of my dad's buddies did some elk hunting, but, you know, it wasn't easy and it was, you know, expensive, even if it wasn't a lot of money for the hunt itself, even if it was public land and so on and so forth, there was still a lot invested in time off and, you know, driving your truck out and, you know, just the equipment involved, the time involved, all that stuff. So it seemed almost unattainable. And then I remember going on my first once in a lifetime elk hunt. And killing a bull, and I have only missed one season since, and that was nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're once in a lifetime elk hunt. You've done that, what, now 25, 30 times?
I've done it quite a few, yeah, right in there.
Yeah. I hear that a lot. I really do, from buddies, from comments on social media. And it honestly kind of breaks my heart when people are like, yeah, you know, I've kind of just written off elk hunting. I just don't think it's in the cards for me. I don't think I'm going to be able to do that. You know, too expensive. It's too hard. And, you know, it kind of breaks my heart when someone says that, because, you know, I've been on the other side of it, you know, not knowing how to get in. It does seem kind of daunting. Luckily for me, my older brother had kind of broken the, you know, the waves and, you know, led the charge and figured out a lot of the things ahead of me. So I got that benefit. But I think you've probably done both sides of it. It can be as expensive as you want to make it.
Sure.
And it can almost be as cheap as you want to make it too. I mean, if you're already a bow hunter, you know, you've got the basics. You might not have the perfect clothing system, but you've probably got some camouflage. And you've got a bow. You might need to maybe tweak an arrow setup, but you've got boots. You've probably got some type of backpack. It might not be perfect, but it might be good enough to get going. And, you know, some of the, you know, quote unquote biggest names in elk hunting, they don't even use packs. I mean, everyone's seen a post of Cameron Haynes just carrying a shoulder off it, you know, out with his over his shoulder, right? Put a quarter on. And there's so many ways you can do it. I mean, we're getting to the point now. I've only done public land. I've only done self-guided. I'm not opposed to guides. I know you had a great hunt with Ryan Carter. I've had Ryan on the podcast. I buy Utah points just so one day, hopefully I draw a pull tag before he retires so I can hunt with him. I mean, I'm not opposed to that at all. But if you're doing the self-guided thing, especially in states like, you know, Colorado, a little bit cheaper tag price, put four people in a truck, split gas four ways. I mean, I think you could do it for about $100 a month. I mean, if you can find a way to put away $100 a month, you could be an elk hunter, you know, and maybe for Christmas, you know, bonus at the end of the year, you buy one piece of gear a year, you know, next I need a new pack and then maybe I need a new set of boots, but it's so attainable. And I think so many people look at it, you know, from the lens of maybe 20, 30 years ago, no information. I have to go guide it. It's going to cost 10 grand. I don't have that kind of money. And that's just not the case. So I that's kind of what I hope is to share. Like, you can do all these things. You know, you don't have to win the Powerball to be able to go out and hunt elk. Unfortunately, I do think once you do it once, like myself and you, you're not going to say it's a once in a lifetime hunt. You're going to be like, on the truck home, you're going to be like, I need to rethink my vacation schedule. Like, this is every year now. I want to come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I agree with you. Like, at the end of the day, a lot of people, they will get what they want to get. And you have to make it a priority. Instead, so many people, you know, around where I live and so on and so forth, they prioritize a lot of things in their life.
Yeah.
Me, myself, I prioritize spending the fall in the mountains. And, you know, I've got to drive, whatever, 12 to 30 hours, depending on what state I go to. And I've got to have discretionary income for that. So I think that you can use elk hunting, mule deer hunting, you know, those kind of adventure hunts or whatever you want to call, as something that helps you to get better, to do more, to, you know, be more effective, being able to make money, be good with your money. You know, I don't have payments to speak of. I have a house payment and that's about it. I'm really, you know, careful with my discretionary income, but then when opportunity knocks, I'm not worried about a $1,200 elk tag, because I've saved money all year long.
Yeah, that was a big, you know, when I was a single dude, I went to engineering school. I'm a, you know, my day job is an engineer. And I think people understand that that is, it's a good degree. It's a good job. It's a good path to be on. Yep. And when I first graduated, I was still living in my college room or my college apartment with a roommate, you know, $300 a month rent, big boy job, no responsibilities to speak of. And I was just like, yeah, let's go to Oklahoma chasing ducks and let's do elk and let's do this and just everything, right? I didn't have a filter and it didn't matter. I had $300. That was like, I think I had a small truck payment and $300 a month rent. And like, those are like my responsibilities. And I'm like, You know, it was very, very easy to get make those payments and still do whatever I want. Well, then you get bigger, you get a house, you know, I had a fiance and start saving for weddings and saying all things. Like, it was kind of painful to start like saying, you know, this is what I'm going to spend on hunting, or this is what I'm going to save for hunting, and what I spend has to be less than that. Like, I have to start putting hunting on a budget, and that was not fun personally. Like, my, you know, it was a good thing to do because it really kind of opened my eye, like how much trail camera batteries really add up to.
And a lot.
Yeah, there's like things
you're running 22 of them.
Yeah. And you just like, you just throw it on the car. You're like, you know, oh, batteries, like that's, you know, and you start thinking about things differently. Like you said, you start prioritizing, like, what really matters to me when it comes to hunting, you know, and I dropped off a couple things. I don't waterfowl hunt anymore. You know, it's fun, super fun. I'd love to go, but it's not worth me taking money to invest in decoys and trailers and blinds and gas, because it's not the same as elk to me. I mean, that's where I stand.
Yeah.
If honkers made me feel the same way at 20 yards that a bull bugling does at 20 yards, I'd be the first one down at Shields buying decoys, but they don't.
Yeah. I get it. Yeah. I understand.
Yeah. So I do really appreciate that. Elk is the big thing. And I think for a lot of people, it becomes the big thing. There's just something magical about those animals. What, aside from elk, what are some of the things, you know, you mentioned in the green room that you grew up in Michigan. I grew up in Minnesota. So both Northwoods, I'm guessing, you know, Whitetail Deer Camp was the big family event. The big hunting event of the year growing up was like deer camp. Is that kind of how you grew up as well?
You know, it was on a smaller scale. My dad liked to hunt, but he was always busy. And I had uncles that were involved, and then ultimately some of my dad's buddies. So whitetail's definitely the cornerstone that we built on from there. And then, you know, come on in, Will. Going to have a visitor. Yes, sir. Sorry about that, Brian.
No worries.
Make yourself at home, Will. I'm on a Zoom call. But it built on that. And then, you know, from there, we started going out west and chasing them. And then ultimately, you know, Argentina and, you know, elk and Alaska and pretty much anything that I can go on.
Within what, so growing up that way and probably not really knowing what's out there or what the opportunities are, what's one hunt besides the elk that you really became, you know, in love with? Like something that you didn't think you was even on the radar growing up that now has become like one of your favorites, like the elk. I think the elk – now, I don't want to discard the elk because that is my favorite too, but I think that's a lot of people would expect that. And so that kind of, what's the next one on the list that you really look forward to every year?
Axis deer.
Yeah.
I'm blessed to live in an area of Texas that has free range axis. And, I didn't even know what an axis was growing up. And now axis is a priority. Usually I have two or three personal hunts for them. And then I guide for them as well. And they're little mini elk. If you talk to Ryan, he'll tell you, they're just little bulls, you know, the way that they, run, the way they communicate, especially during the rut, obviously. And they're just incredible. I love chasing them. They're super wary. It's difficult to kill them with a bow. And, so they've definitely turned into one of my favorites as well.
So people often say, like, I'm not a turkey hunter, and when people find out I'm an elk hunter, they always try to convince me to be a turkey hunter by saying it's like it's the same as elk hunting, or it's like it's poor man's. Hey folks, application season is finally wrapped up, and I hope each and every one of you has a tag for this fall. And by now, you should be starting to think about your e-scouting plans. I'm working on mine as we speak for my Western hunts, and it's actually one of my favorite parts of the entire season, and that's because of Go Hunt Insider. Go Hunt has everything I need to plan an amazing experience this fall. I always start with filtering 2.0 to read up on what my unit has to offer, what the access is like, what the local buzz is. I look at the trophy potential and the harvest rates, and I take all of that information from filtering 2.0 and I move over to Go Hunt Maps, and that is where things get exciting. I'm finding glassing knobs with the 3D mapping features. I'm using the terrain analysis, something that's new you might not have seen yet, where I can look at slopes. I can see which slope is facing which directions, how steep it is, what the elevation is. It's a super cool feature, and it's helping me plan out my routes. I turn on all the water layers, making sure I understand where springs and guzzlers are, where there's creek beds. I'm looking at access points, roadways, you name it. They have it for planning an awesome hunt. I'm storing all of that information in a single hunt plan so I can keep all of my information organized and there's not a bunch of icons on my screen every time I open up my app. There's a reason why I've used Go Hunt Insider to do my e-scouting and plan every single Western hunt I've ever gone on. And it's because it is truly the best resource for the Western hunter. Head over to GoHunt.com and check out all the tools and resources you get with your Insider membership, and you'll see why it's my favorite tool for punching tags. And the best part is, when you use the code WESTERN, they're going to give you $50. That's right, they're going to give you a $50 credit to the gear shop that has some of the best hunting and backpacking gear on the market. So no matter if you're a brand new hunter or a Western veteran, I promise you there's something in the gear shop that'll catch your eye. Head over to GoHunt.com, check it out. Don't forget to use the code WESTERN and start getting your e-scouting plans together because it's going to be hunting season before you know it. Elk hunting, and I'm like, maybe. You know, I can't discredit it because I've never really done it. But is that kind of what access is to you? It's like this is like off-season elk hunting in a way.
It's a good warm-up.
Yeah.
I love that it's not the same time as elk. So we chase axis basically May, June, July. And so it's a great warm up. It just tones the skills up, gets you ready. You know, I tend not to have comparisons because I think that they're all a little different, you know. In fact, my buddy Will that just walked in, he's a huge turkey fan, like loves it, absolutely loves it. Me, I'm not as much, but I love being around people that are passionate about, you know, chasing turkeys. And I get it, the communicating with the animals and stuff, how you can get comparisons, but they're definitely different.
Yeah. Yeah, I've always thought they were too. Now, if you're hunting turkeys in the mountains, there's probably a lot of aspects that start getting really close to elk hunting, getting up early, getting up on those ridges, you know, starting some calls, just a different animal that's coming in. So I can see why people say that, you know, the communication style for sure, you know, locate them, get in close, do a setup, a calling setup. I do see it. I haven't gotten bit by the turkey bug personally, so I might have to try.
One more bite, you know.
It is nice, like you said, it's in a different season. It's in the spring, but I'm a shed hunter at heart. And to me, to sit out in the woods and wait for a turkey versus the chance of picking up like a you know, on one more big shed, I always lean shed hunting.
See, you just have to combine it. You pick up sheds while you're turkey hunting.
Yeah, then I would finally find a turkey and my like shotgun would be unloaded, strapped to my back, like not ready at all. So that's super cool. I've never done the axis, but I've seen people, I've heard people talk. I've also heard that they're absolutely delicious.
They are delicious.
Do you think it's like, you know, you've brought home some monster bulls. Especially like a big mature bull. I shot one once that was 8.5 years old. I would say it was not peak rut. It was like first week of September, so maybe pre-rut. You could definitely taste some gaminess on those bigger bulls. And I feel like the smaller the cervid, the more the less gaminess on average. You know, like whitetails I think are a little bit less. Antelope in my experience have always been phenomenal. I'm curious if there's like a trend there, but is that kind of what you would say, like the axis deer just very delicious, you know, tender red meat without like a lot of like those big elk, they get kind of, I don't know, you can tell it was a big bull elk.
Oh yeah, no, I think as a whole axis are fantastic. They have a very mild taste to them, and they're not as prone to being overcooked. A lot of times with elk and whitetails, you got to be real careful not to overcook it. Or else it really dries it out. And I think axis is good all the time. So,
do they have a little bit more fat content in the meat? Do you notice when you're preparing them and cutting them up?
Not necessarily. Lately, a lot of the bucks have had fat content on the outside, but they're pretty lean.
Okay. Still lean. It's just a little easier to cook them.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I'll have to find a way to get down south and try it for myself sometime.
Be careful.
Because it's going to become one of those every year things, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. One of the things that I really wanted to talk to you and get your thoughts on, with all of the elk hunting that you've done, I'm guessing you've been to some, you know, very top tier premier units, maybe units that truly are once in a lifetime. And I'm guessing you've done your fair share of over the counter general tag units as well. What do you think about that? Like, can you describe to listeners, like, what the differences are in the elk and the hunting and, like, what someone will notice if you were to do, like, a Colorado over-the-counter archery hunt followed by, you know, the unit that you hunted? I don't know exactly what unit it was, but I know Ryan Carter, you know, hunts some very, very hard-to-get tags and units. And these elk, you know, you might be literally one of the few people that have ever interacted with that animal in its entire life. So what's the differences between those two hunts and those two elk behaviors?
I mean, that's a complicated question with a lot of different answers, but at the end of the day, it's people, is what it boils down to, or lack of people.
Yeah.
You know, the last OTC bull that I killed was, 2 seasons ago. And I mean, one of the trailheads had 19 trucks at it. And so I had to move 5 times before I ended up, you know, finding some unmolested elk. Pretty much everywhere we turned, there was just a ton of people that had unfortunately just got done watching The Hunting Public and Born and Raised and all of our friends in the outdoor industry make it look easy, even if they try and make it look hard. And so there's just a ton of people, and you have to be in the right mental state because you're looking for a bull instead of looking for a herd bull or a mature bull. And it's a grind. You have to somewhat get lucky. Now, on the flip side, you go to a premier unit and you get to enjoy not only a lot less people, but also you get to enjoy seeing the herds work the way they're supposed to, with herd bulls and satellite bulls and raggies. And, you know, it's the same as a well manicured, you know, 400 or 500 acre farm in Iowa or Illinois or whatever, you know, where you actually get to see mature bucks and, you know, you get to see the younger bucks and the way that they work back and forth. It's a completely different experience. It's quality over just opportunity.
Yeah. I've always kind of thought about, so I've had a once in a life, truly once in a life. I'm not even allowed to apply again in North Dakota. And then I've gotten lucky in Colorado. They gave me 4 extra bonus points 1 year when they switched their bonus point online systems up. I'm like, well, might as well use them. I was in a wedding during September anyway for one of my best friends. Very on the fence on, you know, where do you draw the line between doing September weddings and, you know, saying, yeah, I'll be there. No, I won't.
I won't be there.
But for me that year, we were already over cap on Wyoming. We had 7 people in our group, and Wyoming only allows you to apply 6. And we didn't have the numbers to split into 2 groups. I can't remember, but, you know, we don't really like to split into 2 groups because then, you know, like, not both groups are guaranteed. We were in that border bracket, that, you know, that preference point where it's like 75% good chance. And so I'm like, hey, I got 5 extra points in Colorado. The best tag I can draw with that is a second season rifle. I got a wedding anyway that I really do want to go to. It's like my best friend, and he's not a hunter, and I get that. Like, you shouldn't plan your whole life around my schedule. It's a one-time event. You know, I won't attend a wedding in September, but he asked me to be in his wedding. So I did that. And I'm like, it just works out really well. But that unit, you know, obviously it's not the same as an over-the-counter unit. You weed out a lot of pressure just by going up 5 points. And it, to me, it felt like when we hunt general season, over-the-counter tags, archery, you know, first of all, it's getting very difficult to hear bulls sound off and getting them to just sound off in the West. And I think it has to do with a lot of factors. I think weather is always a variable, but I think probably the most common variable is either, you know, predator pressure. Well, I guess it is predator pressure. It's either 2-legged predators or 4-legged predators. And these elk are starting to get smart. And they, like, every time, you know, Billy bugled, he got shot at. And so I don't want to be like Billy anymore. I'm going to keep my mouth shut and use my nose to find my cows. And, But when you do find one on over the counter, I feel like, you know, you make a game plan, and everyone's got their own strategy. Everyone's got their own way to hunt. You know, we make our game plan. This is what we're going to do. We're going to move in. We're going to have a caller shooter set up. We're going to come in with cow calls. We're going to try to get as close as possible without busting them. We can get in. Summer is finally here, which means hunting season is also going to be here before we know it. So now is the perfect time to be trimming lanes, planting food plots, and putting up some new stands so you're ready when those big bucks start cruising this fall. And if you've been thinking about putting up a new stand on your property, I can tell you it has never been easier with the combination of Maverick Hunting Blinds and their all-new Elevate platforms. I've got both on my property, and one of my favorite things about the Booner panel blind and the Elevate platform is how easy it is to set them up. Building a deer stand used to be a multiple weekend project for me before, but now with this Booner panel blind and Elevate platform, I can have a new stand up in just one day. I can even get these into every part of my property because they're super light and easy to assemble, yet rock solid when you're on top of that platform. Make sure you roll into this fall confident and ready for those big bucks, because you know you got your stand set up and ready to rock well before season even started. Head over to maverickhunting.com to check out all the options and see why I'm such a huge fan of hunting out of these Maverick platform blinds. And when you check out using the code WESTERNROOKIE, you're going to save 10% on your entire purchase. Inside 100 yards, then the playbook kind of opens up, right? It's like second and two. You can really throw any play you want on second and two. And I would say a lot of times play doesn't work, right? You got to go find another one. And when we had those other tags, it's like anything worked. You could do whatever you wanted and it worked. I mean, the elk just did elk things. And you throw up a decoy and they're curious. You do a cow call and they respond. You do a locator bugle and they bugle for 35 minutes after that. And so I kind of felt like that's one of the differences, is like sometimes it's just, like you said, you got to be in the right mind space. You got to be in the right space to have a plan that's the right plan and it still doesn't work. And I was always, I want to hunt more of those units where you have the right plan and it does work, you know. And to me, working is just getting the bull within 40 yards.
Yeah.
You know, no one's out there trimming lanes. So that we've had a lot of hunts where we get bulls inside 40 and we still don't get a shot.
Yep. Happens all the time.
Yeah, that part is frustrating. Do you change your strategy very much between the two different styles? I mean, it's a gradient. It's really not like good units, bad units. Every unit is somewhere on the spectrum. Do you like notice you're changing your strategy when you're closer to like one end or the other on how you hunt?
I feel like I'm changing all the time. At the end of the day, I see these guys get up on stage and talk strategy and, you know, even podcasts, no offense, talk strategy and so on and so forth. The truth is every hunt is unique. Even though there's variables that are similar, every hunt is different based on weather, pressure, property, topography, you know, time of year, just all these different things. So I'm just a cook that is constantly looking at what's going on and then trying to figure out the recipe for that day and that week, that month, whatever it is. And I'm constantly trying to find new areas to hunt. You know, this year I'm going to hunt two areas I've never hunted before. I guess technically three. And I like that. It's difficult, but everyone is a little bit unique. And so before I jump off and decide I'm going to do what's worked for the last, whatever, 15, 20 years, I will be in almost observation mode. And I'm trying to figure out, number one, where's my competition? Where's the people at? Where are they coming in from? What are they doing? How many camps from Oklahoma? How many camps from Alabama? How many camps from Pennsylvania? You know, where are we at? Yeah. Can we find unmolested elk? Because ultimately unmolested elk equal elk that come in. And then once that starts to happen, then you start putting in all the variables of, you know, how do I get away from these folks? How do I find bulls that haven't been touched? How do I access, get in, get out? Then the weather is an X factor. You know, there's just a lot of things going on. That's why I love it. It's difficult, but until it isn't, once it comes together, you're like, oh, that was easy.
Yeah. When you finally get the right recipe and it just works, it feels good. And then you're like, okay, now we really have the work. Now we have the work cut out for us for sure. Yeah. I like that. We're very adaptable. I'll pull out any play in the book that I think will work. And that's why I just, you know, I kind of view it as like this little mental toolbox. And if you go elk hunting and the only tool you got in your toolbox is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. And it just doesn't work. Like, you know, I don't think, you know, Corey Jacobson is famous. And I think that's why a lot of people do this, is he's just like, all I do is run ridges and bugle. And that's, I think, an okay strategy. If you've got the time to walk past 100 bulls to find one that's in the mood. If you're like a guy like myself that's coming from Minnesota, like the Midwest, the East, you got 7 days to get it done. I don't know if that's the best strategy to stick with. You know, I wouldn't ride or die with that one play. Is that you might spend all week walking around and not getting that bull. And if you don't have any other tools in your toolbox, you know, you're not giving yourself the best chances. And so I always try to just collect more ideas.
I love Corey. In fact, I'm actually hunting with Corey this year in September.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I give him a hard time all the time because I'm like, man, I like to kill elk, whatever that looks like. Yeah. Even if that means I'm not talking, I will, you know, adapt and overcome. Like many times, Colorado OTC, I don't do that much calling. I'm trying to find elk. I'm trying to get in areas where elk live and, you know, be able to get a bow shot. But Corey, his shtick is calling, and he only wants to call a bull in and kill it. And that is what he loves to do. And so more power to him. You know, he's 100% good with passing on 6, 7, 8 bulls if it means that he kills a bull, you know, day 8 that comes in screaming and, you know, he can frontal it at 15 yards. 'Cause that's his goal.
Yeah. And I mean, if I had to pick a way to kill an elk, like if you gave me a little bar coupon that said one free setup, right? I'm going to pick a bull coming in, seeing red, bugling his head off at a frontal shot at 8 yards.
Sure. Right?
Like who wouldn't? That would be amazing. But that's just, I mean, it's not the high odds. I don't think that's the highest odds encounter. I just don't. I don't, especially an over-the-counter. Now, you get, you know, if you go, you're hunting some reservation tag that, you know, these elk have never seen a person, or you're hunting a 25-point unit in Utah, that maybe that encounter goes up a little bit.
Sure.
But over-the-counter archery in Colorado, I just don't see that being the most common way to get close to a bull. And so...
Agreed.
Like you, I just, whatever gets, I'm the same. I think I'm more like you. Not that there's a right or wrong, but it's like, I want to experience this elk hunt. I want to get an arrow red. I want to bring some meat home, and I'm not too particular on how it all works out. As long as it's legal and ethical, I'm on board for it. Right. If this unit, I'm at the point with my bow, especially, you know, if it's legal, those calves are really juicy and they're easier to pack off the mountain.
Wait, whatever floats your boat. I haven't done that yet, but you never know. I get hungry.
Yeah, you go for a few years without punching a bow tag, and it's amazing. It's almost like going to the grocery store when you're already hungry of what you'll bring home, what you're willing to bring home. Now, there's units where I just, you know, the first bull I shot was the once-in-a-lifetime tag, and that was a unit where, you know, I took a video of a beautiful 7x8, and I was like, I'm trying to learn. I'm really good at scoring whitetails because that was where I grew up and I live, and I get cell phone pictures all the time. On elk, I'm not. I mean, I'm not that. I don't do that a lot, and so I'm listening to every Carter podcast I can find on how to score big bulls and, you know, what to look for. And I, you know, I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm doing this right because I get 395 on this bull, and that I know how absurd that sounds and how rare it is. So I sent him the video and I was like, hey, I just took this video 2 hours ago out here in the Badlands. I'm scoring this and I'm coming up with like 390 to 400. Am I way off? Like, am I just out here clueless with my head in the sand? And I remember distinctly he was driving and he responded with a voice note. And I was like, oh my gosh, he actually saw this. And it was really, really fast. And he goes, man, that bull is huge. Every time I look at him, he gets bigger. Like, I can't be certain, but I get through high 380s to high 390s. You better stay on him and measure him for me. And unfortunately, bow hunters for whitetails and mule deer came into that spot a week before my season opened up. He relocated like big bulls do. You know, they don't like pressure, even if it's not on them. And a private landowner got him. A week after I shot my bull, I found a different bull and took home a beautiful bull as well. But man, there was something about those big bulls. And that was a hunt where I knew, like, even though I haven't shot an elk, I'm not going to, you know, shoot that juicy looking calf on this once in a lifetime hunt. I mean, this unit is really special. And I'm okay with actually walking away with my tag still just to really experience the hunt.
Yep.
Yeah. That was a big one for me. So I also wanted, I've been thinking about one other idea over the last, you know, couple months, really. And it really did come from listening to some of Ryan's strategies on how to find big elk, or the way he likes to find them. And he really makes a lot of correlations to like big whitetails and coming out with similar patterns. When you were hunting with him, were you doing the typical archery strategy where you're on the ground running around, listening to bulls getting close, or were you doing the tree stand? We've got a bull in mind and we've got a pattern and we're going to do more of the ambush style. Did you do both? And like, what were your thoughts on the two different styles?
Yes, I did both. I feel like I did two elk hunts when I was with Ryan. You know, at the end of the day, he came up with a hit list based on the cameras and stuff that he had out. And so we had a hit list of 4 to 6 different bulls that were green light. And then the first 9 days I sat a tree stand. But in 9 days of sitting a tree stand, I saw 2 elk. That is a mental grind to do that. And I passed on like a 330 type bull at 12 yards. So that was awesome. The other bull that I saw was really early. I'm not even sure how big he was because it was that gray light time. But after that, I did a mental reset. I had to go back to work. And when I came back, it was completely different. We abandoned the tree stands and started getting on patterns to, you know, basically find one of our target bulls. And I killed, I don't know, I think 6 days into that second stretch or 5 days into that second stretch. And I killed without calling at all. So you just never know. Got to be adaptable.
Wow. Yeah, that is, you know, I've heard the way he, and it's not like, hey, we're going to start the easy way and just put you in a tree stand. And then we'll, if that doesn't work, then we'll do the hard way. It's really about like this time of the year, the earlier season in Utah, it's better a lot of times to get on a pattern because they're not rutting yet. You know, and it's like early season whitetails. You can get on that food to bed pattern and the pattern is different. The behavior is different, but that's the kind of the correlation is, that's easier. But then, you know, if they start rutting, then that strategy isn't the more better odds strategy. Now we got to get on the ground and get close to them. And, right. And so, yeah, it's, I feel for you, man. 9 days, I've done 9 day elk hunts and saw 2 elk, but at least we were moving the whole time, seeing different things, taking, you know, sunrise and sunset selfies on cool ridges so that we can do something, show some pictures when we get home. And that's a grind. I can't imagine sitting in a tree stand, you know, that stretch and the mental games, and it's long days in late August, early September.
The hardest part about that was that everyone told me how great that tag was. And so every time I turned around, they were like, oh man, it's like I hit the lotto. And so to have that, you know, consistently being played in my head, and then not finding any elk, it was pretty ridiculous. So,
did you draw the tag or did you do the auction?
I drew it.
Drew it? Wow. Did you know you were, so I know in Utah there's always a chance because of the way their point strategy works.
Yeah.
So you could draw it with 0 points.
I drew the random.
You drew in the random. So you weren't even really expecting it yet. You're just building points and applying every year. And
no, I can't remember. I had 12 or 13 points, I think, maybe 14, but I did. It's a 20-plus unit.
To get guaranteed.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
I drew one of the randos.
Wow. Are you building points for the same unit again?
You got to sit out for 5 years. So,
oh, you do.
This will be the first year, this coming year, 2025, that I'll have an opportunity to put in.
Okay. And so when you started phase two, you went back to work, got some stuff tidied up, reset, probably get a little sleep, build a little energy back up, come back out. Were you, I've heard stories, and obviously, like, you always tell the stories of the days where everything in the woods was on fire, right? You don't spend too much time talking about the days where you didn't hear a bull bugle, but that happens in every unit. Was it more like that? Like, we're seeing elk all the time. You mentioned that you didn't do any calling, so does that mean the bulls were staying pretty vocal enough that you didn't have to, or what was that like when you got back?
I killed my bull just after Labor Day, so it was not on fire yet. I bet I heard a total, in 14 days of elk hunting, I bet I heard 15 bugles.
Okay.
So there was hardly any bugles to speak of. The first day back, Ryan was down there, and we actually did some spot and stalk stuff in a couple areas where we could actually do some glassing. And then after that, I switched gears and went back into the core area where a couple of the bulls were that I was chasing. And it was not on fire yet. But like I said, I think it was the fifth or sixth that I killed.
Yeah.
So, and it was a very hot year too, which makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't like to do a lot of stuff when I'm that hot. So I'm going to have to get used to it because we're doing a Nebraska whitetail hunt here in like 2.5 weeks. And the long range forecast is calling for low 90s every day. And so hopefully the trees we sit in have some good shade.
Yeah, no doubt. I've got my computer is not too far away. I might have to go grab a cord. So,
oh yeah, we can pause quick if you want to do that, and then we can.
Can we do that?
Yeah, yeah. I'll just put a flag in, and we'll edit it up.
Cool.
Yeah.
Be right back. All right, replugged in.
Oh, awesome! Sounds good. So we talked about big bulls, axis deer. You've done a lot of stuff. I'm curious. Are you starting to run into a wall space problem at all? Because it's one thing to not have, you know, when you someone like me that doesn't necessarily shoot giant animals everywhere I go, you know, it's easy to put European and horn mounts on the wall, but you shoot a lot of really awesome animals. And so how do you kind of handle that with, you know, there's only so much space on the wall?
Man, probably about 10 years ago, I stopped mounting a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. Some special stuff I have, like the Utah bull, I did a pedestal and so on and so forth. But I actually, if you look behind me, depends on the camera, it won't. You'll see I have plenty of wall space.
Oh, you still got some left. Okay. Oh, yeah.
There's some axis up there and stuff, but I have lots of wall space. And I don't, most of my mounts aren't even in the house. They're, I need to probably put a few more up, but I don't get shoulder mounts done much anymore. They just take up so much room. And, don't get me wrong. My wife has a couple that she wants me to get done. She wants a moose on the wall and a caribou. So I need to put that on the list.
So let's get this documented. Your wife wants you to bring home more taxidermy. I think you've got a situation a lot of folks out there are envious of.
My wife's pretty awesome. And in fact, I like Euros better than she does by far. And so I have a ton of Euros that will end up in the garage and in my office and so on and so forth, because I prefer Euros and she prefers shoulder mounts.
That's interesting. So my wife is getting more and more into hunting now that she's done with med school and residency. And last year she actually shot more animals than I did, which is awesome. And yep. She's the opposite. She is like, I think if she shot, like, we've got some really big whitetail bucks on our farms that we're tracking. And one we've been following the 2 years we've owned our personal 40 acres here. We've been following him and seeing him on camera. And if she shoots him, I think we're going to end up in civil court.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? Because I'm like, we got a shoulder mount, and she loves the Euros. And so it's technically her. I'm like, but we've been chasing this buck for 2 years. He's in, I mean, we'll get pictures of him in our backyard at night. And there's, we've got video of him glassing from our bedroom window out in the food plot eating. I mean, it's really cool. And so she's big on the Euros. And I don't get me wrong, I like Euros too, but for a buck like that, I'm like, man, I really want to mount them. And so yeah, I'm moving more that way too. And for me, I don't have the wall space you've got for one. Elk do take, I mean, it's hard to mount an elk on an 8-foot wall, and that's pretty much all we got. And I've already got two elk on pedestals. And so I'm like, I feel like I'm going to need to do a lot of Euro mounts and hopefully, you know, not shoot any more 350s, because I don't know what I'll do if, you know, I shoot a big special bull like that. But they're getting expensive. But that's I think the biggest factor that I'm kind of moving over to the Euros is, you know, a big bull shoulder mount pedestals. I mean, depends on your taxidermist, could be up to like $2,000 now.
Yeah, I'm more about the experience than I am the mount itself. So don't get me wrong, I appreciate the memories, but I'd rather save the money for tags. So I have a 350 bull that's Euroed in my garage.
That's when you get that many reps under your belt that you're like, hey, this is, you know, just another 350 bull. Let's just Euro it and put it in the garage. I think that's a pretty cool testament to like how much elk hunting someone's done. Right.
Well, when you take and I mean, I've been blessed to shoot a lot of bulls, but then you go meet a guy like Ryan Lampers, that's one of the Peaks guys, and you look at all the bulls he throws away. Well, he doesn't throw them away, but all of his sub, you know, bulls, that guy has killed more elk. It's insane the number of, you know, 320 plus bulls that he has Euroed, just piles of them.
Have you followed Dan Stanton at all?
Yeah, I know Dan.
Elk Shame. I really think it's cool the way he's just got like 24 bulls upside down on his rig in his gym that he's just like throw another one up there for motivation. Yep. And it looks cool. I really do think when you kind of like the first one, it might be kind of emotional. Like, I don't know if I should shoulder mount him or not. I think I have one shoulder mount that maybe looking back, I wish I would have Euroed just to save, like you said, save that money, put it towards a tag. But when you start stacking up like a good wall of Euros, I think that starts almost taking over a little bit, because very few people, let's be honest, are going to have 20 shoulder mounted elk. I mean, Cam Haynes is like the only one.
Dan Evans, he's got a pile of them.
Yeah. I mean, and that's cool too, but I think when you can stack up a whole bunch of Euros in your shop, or I mean, that also looks phenomenal. It really does. Agreed. I think that's the cool thing. What are you doing with all the meat? That's one of the things that came up during our conversation too. Do you just give a lot to friends and family? Are you on like a 2 pound a day elk meat diet so you can bring home your two bulls a year? How does that look?
It all depends on where we're sitting. I have 6 kids. And so,
you guys are on the 2 pounds of elk meat a day.
Well, all my kids are grown. So anybody and everyone, my youngest is 18 and my oldest is 29. So, they go through a fair amount of meat as well, and they're always welcome to my freezers. And then I know a lot of different people that appreciate good elk meat. Mm-hmm. And, so if I have more than I think I can use, I will donate it to, you know, friends and family. And there's a long list of people that want elk meat. So it's
never a problem.
Not a problem. And then I always make sure I keep enough for burgers. And like, we're getting ready, we got a camp this weekend, and I'll make sure that I basically provide all the meat. So we'll be eating elk and Axis all weekend.
Yeah. You've definitely had enough animals. I think there's a, you know, myself on the lean years, it's like, okay, we need the staples, right? The steaks, the burger. We do a lot of ground. Me and my wife do a lot of meal prepping just to save time cooking. And so we go through a lot of ground meat. We go through a lot of steaks. And when like last year, we didn't shoot an elk. We only shot two whitetails. You don't get a lot of meat. I mean, for someone that is eats a lot. That wasn't enough to like start dabbling with different things like jerky and sticks and different, you know, experimenting with different recipes. But we've done the opposite where I've shot, you know, an elk by myself and then went on a group hunt and shot elk and we shot five deer and an antelope and we put 500 pounds of meat in the freezer. And then you got all kinds of things to experiment with. Sounds like you've had a lot of those years as well. Have you found any, you know, little, you know, maybe secret recipes or secret styles of cooking that you don't think are very good? Or do you just stick to the good old tried and trues?
You know, my go-to is just simple, you know, when it comes to steaks, you know, I just love good seasonings, love trying new seasonings. Chupacabra is really good on a lot of stuff. And then when it comes to burgers, I love just putting a little bit of Worcestershire, a little bit of teriyaki, and then a steak seasoning and actually, you know, kneading it into the meat itself throughout and doing that twice. And by doing that, I find that my elk burgers come out really, really good.
You're talking about like a cheeseburger, like a burger patty. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a smash burger.
Yeah, smash burger. Is that what that's typically how you cook it then, is just bring it in a 1 pound thing and just make a bunch of balls and smash them on a flat top?
Yep.
That would be a lot easier than making burger patties and freezing them.
Yeah.
I've done that before too, and it's fun. I mean, it's still great, but it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work to get them to freeze right. Yep. Awesome. Cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast today, Jeff, and sharing some of your stories, some of the crazy for the folks that are listening, I feel bad. You got to go and check out some of the photos, but the size of some of the bulls that you've crossed paths with on your journey it's really remarkable. I mean, there's some big elk featured on your Instagram page.
Well, hopefully this year we'll have a few more to add to the list.
Yeah. I assume by this point you've pretty much got your season, you know, planned out. Not too many tags are still up for grabs, I don't think. You got some units or some hunts that you're real excited about this year, some higher chance or higher odds units that seen some special bulls, or is this a over the counter year?
I've got a couple over the counter tags, and then I am excited. I've got a pretty good Montana tag that we'll be chasing some bigger bulls hopefully and holding out for a little bit better age class. The over the counter stuff, you know, anything goes.
Yeah. Any elk with a bow is a trophy.
Yeah.
So I get it. Well, thanks, man. Thanks for being here, sharing some of your stories with the guests. We'll put the links to the social media and your pages in the show notes for anyone that wants to go check out some of the memories you've made. And once again, I appreciate y'all.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.